old are your children?
Good afternoon. Today is February 22nd, 2017. We're going to open up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on General Government. Colleagues, today we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 5018, the Oregon State Library. So let's get that opened up. And we're going to ask Mary Kay if you want to come on up and bring your team up here. And in the meantime, LFO, is there anything we need to know to get kickstarted here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. Amanda Beidle with the Legislative Fiscal Office. I do want to note for the record that the subcommittee had requested some additional information on the e-government program, and so tomorrow the manager of that program will be here to give a brief presentation before we go into the budget vote for the Ethics Commission. The materials for today's meeting are posted under today's date on OLIS. As a brief overview, the Oregon State Library provides library services to support state government operations, reading materials for Oregonians with print disabilities, and leadership and resources to promote the development and support of local library services. The total 17-19 current service level budget for the library is $16.2 million, including 40.04 FTE. And as a final note, last session, House Bill 3523 was passed, which restructured the mission and the governance of the Oregon State Library, expanding board membership, creating the State Reference Coordinating Council, and providing the library the authority to approve reference databases and subscriptions for state agencies. And so in order to achieve alignment with this reorganization, the library was directed to review and update its key performance measures for the 17-19 biennium, and the agency will be presenting on that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Can I make a comment, Mr.
Yes,
Chair?
Representative.
So just for the record, I just want to make a comment that in the interest of transparency that my son-in-law works for the Oregon State Library, so just want to be transparent about that.
Cool. Thank you. All right, Mary Kay, we're going to let you kick it off, but before you do, colleagues, I have to let you know that the chair of the State Library Board, Aletha Bonebrick, is with us. She's probably one of the best friends of libraries in Oregon and has been a dear friend of mine for many years. And so, Aletha, it's great seeing you.
Thank you.
We're glad you're here.
Representative Smith, thank you.
So, all right, Mary Kay, kick us off.
Thank you, Co-Chair Smith. Co-Chair Manning, members of the committee, my name is Mary Kay Dahlgreen, and I am the state librarian. I'm here today to provide you with some information about the Oregon State Library. The State Library was established in 1905. Here you'll see some of the highlights and turning points for the State Library. I would say probably the most important are the State Library building, which is directly across from us here, was completed and opened in 1939. I invite all of you to come visit me at the State Library. In 1969, Talking Book and Braille Library was moved from Multnomah County Library to the State Library. In 1993, we made some pretty major changes in terms of government information and library services as an assessment agency and creating the Ready to Read grant program. And then, of course, in 2015, we had the passage of House Bill 3523, which made some significant changes that I'll be talking about in just a minute. So this is the Oregon Revised Statute as it was changed by House Bill 3523, which was passed during the 2015 session. We'll be talking more about the changes that legislation made to the State Library as we go through the presentation. The duties of the State Library that appear in ORS 357008 grow out of the policies that are outlined here. One of the outcomes of this legislation is that the State Library reports to the legislature on a biennial basis on a variety of duties and responsibilities. Those reports have been posted on OLIS for you to review at your leisure. The State Library mission, which is to provide leadership and resources to continue growing vibrant library service for Oregonians who are print disabled, the legislature and state government, and all Oregonians through local libraries. This mission was created as part of the State Library Board strategic plan, which covers the period from 2014 to 2017. As a matter of fact, the board will be meeting tomorrow to do an update to this strategic plan. And we are looking to align with the 17-19 budget. The mission currently aligns, of course, with our establishing statute, so we do not anticipate changes to the mission. These strategic imperatives, which are essentially our goals at the State Library, grew out of the strategic planning process and our mission. They've guided the work of the State Library since 2014 and are being reexamined by the board for the upcoming biennium. We have decided to focus on the customer, and a couple of the things that we're doing in terms of focusing on the customer was creating customer service standards and training. We want to build awareness of the State Library. We did an awareness audit, a brand audit, and found out that the people who know about us love us, but there's lots and lots of people who don't know that the State Library exists, who don't know the services that we provide. And cultivate staff. We have some amazing, amazing staff at the State Library. And one of the things that we want to do is we want to be able to help move those people along and use their talents to improve the State Library. Partnerships, enhancing partnerships, really helps us to reduce duplication and realize efficiencies, particularly as we increase partnerships with state agencies. We're currently working with the Office of the Chief Education Officer and Teacher Standards and Practices to develop an IT cooperative to take advantage of differing IT strengths. Another long-standing partnership that I'd like to point out is our sister relationship with the Fujian Provincial Library. I was the guest of the Provincial Library in October of 2016 in celebration of 20 years of library staff exchanges. The State Library staff has created an exhibit on the second floor of the State Library to highlight that partnership, and again, I'd like to invite you all to come and visit. This is an overview of our organizational structure, and I will be providing more detail on each division as I go through the presentation. And here is basically an overview of the governor's request budget in terms of percentages of fund types that we have in each of our divisions. And I'll be talking in more detail as I go through each division. So the next several slides are the changes that were made by House Bill 3523. The new board was put in place in January of 2016 with the currently serving members. It was changed from 7 members to 9 members, and then we also made some very specific, the legislation made very specific changes to who served on the State Library Board. So we now have the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, or designee, Executive Director of the Commission for the Blind, or designee, 2 state agency staff persons, 1 academic librarian, 2 public library representatives, and 2 members of the public. We have those first 5 positions in place, and we are spending the next 2 years rotating the remainder of the board members off the board. So we anticipate, and sadly, Aletha is one of the board members that's going to be rotating off at the end of June. We will be replacing her with 1 public library representative from Eastern Oregon and 1 public member from Western Oregon. And then in July of 2018, we'll be doing the opposite of that for the last 2 positions. The state librarian position was changed in the legislative session with House Bill 3523. Prior to House Bill 3523, the state librarian was appointed by the State Library Board. This was changed to being appointed by and serving at the pleasure of the governor, as well as subject to confirmation by the Senate. One of the things that stayed the same was that the state librarian would be required to have a master's of librarianship. And that was a very important component for the state library community, to have a professional librarian as the state librarian. Excuse me. Another component was the Reference Coordinating Council, and this is essentially the State Law Library, the State Library, and the State Archives working together to reduce duplication and increase efficiencies. The 3 agencies have been working together for many years, and this has created a structure for cooperation and collaboration between the State Library, State Archives, and the State of Oregon Law Library to reduce duplication. One of the primary things that we've done since we've created the Reference Coordinating Council was to create a process for assuring that reference-related databases go through the appropriate agency. House Bill 3523 also provided the State Library with the responsibility of approving reference-related databases in state agencies, again, to reduce duplication and to improve efficiencies. We went to 122 agencies, boards, and commissions identified as being affected by this legislation. Of those contacted, so far 102 have responded. As specified in the legislation, the Judicial Department and the State Archives are not included in the requirement of the statute. Again, the purpose of the program: reduce duplication, provide cost savings, share knowledge and information, and encourage partnerships. The information collected so far demonstrates that the only overlap occurs in newspaper subscriptions. So we will be exploring our options to reduce that duplication. A really important outcome of this process is that we have created better communication between the State Library and agencies about the resources that we do have available at the State Library for agencies to use. And finally, House Bill 3523 provided the State Library with the responsibility of certifying state agency libraries or library service that's maintained separate from the State Library. We have not moved as far along on this as we have on the subscriptions because we're still working to identify those organizations that do have library services or agency libraries. We did send out a certification survey in January, and we sent it out to eight agencies. We sent it out to Dogami, OSHA, ODOT, Corrections, DCBS, the State Hospital, Forestry, and the DHS Foster Care Parent Lending Library. We have heard back from six of those agencies, and I'm going to be with my government services program manager, I am going to be following up with those agencies to work through what exactly a certification of a state agency library means. And so I will be reporting back to the legislature before the end of the session on what we find. Library Support and Development is the division that works primarily with Oregon libraries. We work with academic, public, tribal, and school libraries. You'll see we have a very flat organization, and the program manager for Library Support and Development is half-time. She spends the other half of her time as the program manager for Talking Book and Braille Library. The Library Support and Development is primarily funded with general fund and federal fund. We do have a little bit of other fund, which is mostly miscellaneous receipts. The Ready to Read grant program in 2017-19, the governor's recommended budget is $978,540. The rest of that general fund goes for staffing and library support and development. Our federal funds come to us from the Library Services and Technology Act grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services. We get about $2.1 million a year, and we do a lot of statewide programs with that, but we also have some competitive grants. And I wanted to point out a couple of the competitive grants. The Springfield Public Library has got a grant for $27,000 to provide library cards for kids in the Springfield School District who lived outside the city of Springfield. And I actually just spoke to the director of the Springfield Library today. And in addition to signing up 400 kids who hadn't had library cards and lived out of the city, they signed up an additional 500 kids who live in the city. So I would say that that's an incredible return on a $27,000 investment. Independence Public Library has created a makerspace to go. They don't have a lot of room for a makerspace in their library, so they've created makerspaces that can be taken, that can be checked out. Library Support and Development Services are the audience for that, the customers are 133 public libraries, legally established public libraries, 56 academic libraries, 1,532 school libraries, 9 tribal libraries, and we also work directly with community members, library staff, and library board members. What I have a picture of here is the Halsey City Library, which reopened in August of 2015. That's the original library building from the early part of the 20th century, and they've decided to turn it back into the library. Youth and school library consulting and services is a very large part of what we do in library support and development. The Oregon School Library Information System is a website that makes online databases available to all K-12 students. Summer Reading Program makes materials available to all public libraries. We have two incredibly good consultants, Jen Maurer and Katie Anderson, who are our school library consultant and youth services consultant, who provide excellent consulting and technical assistance. Also, this is the group that takes that administers the Ready to Read grant program. So I just wanted to I'm gonna take a step back a little bit and talk about Senate Bill 75, which we'll be talking about again in a minute. But Senate Bill 75 is a reimagining of the Ready to Read grant program, and that bill was requested by the governor on behalf of the state library. In two previous legislative sessions, 2013 and 2015, we attempted to broaden the scope of the Ready to Read grant program to include 15 to 17 year olds. After the 2013 session, I created a task force, and as actually a member of the task force is here to testify today, of librarians, education agency staff, and youth-serving nonprofits to make recommendations about changing the Ready to Read grant to leverage the opportunity for libraries to improve their efforts to reduce the achievement gap and to demonstrate to policymakers that public libraries are essential partners in achieving statewide education outcomes. House Bill 2479 was introduced in 2015 to expand the program so that the libraries could use state funding to better support students all year round and support high school students during the summer. It also requires libraries to use state funds to make an effort to engage underserved youth in state-funded library programs. House Bill 2479 was heard in the House Education Committee and then referred to Ways and Means and didn't move beyond that. So that is primarily the reason that we asked the governor to introduce Senate Bill 75, was so that we could have another look at making those expansions to the Ready to Read grant program. One of the things that our youth services consultant has done as a result of that task force was to implement outcome measures for all of our Ready to Read grants. So now every library in the state who gets a Ready to Read grant is required to provide us information on 5 outcome areas. 2 of them are early literacy outcome areas, and 3 are a summer reading program. I've only put 2 of them up here. But the first one is that young children develop the 6 early literacy skills. And we found that 57% of the libraries that responded reported that most children were achieving this outcome. And then the youth maintaining or improving their literacy skills over the summer, it was the same number, about 57%, who said that libraries who say that most children achieved the outcome of maintaining or improving their literacy skills. Another key component of libraries that has been in place for many, many years, but we're bringing into the 21st century, is resource sharing. We have a number of programs that provide opportunities for libraries to share resources electronically and physically. One of these is AnswerLand, and some of you may remember from last session, we moved the AnswerLand project, which is funded with federal funds, we moved that from Multnomah County Library to the State Library, and that has been going very well. We've been getting it back up and running again. We provide online databases for all Oregonians via their libraries, and then also via Libraries of Oregon. Anybody in the state of Oregon can access those databases. Technology development is an absolutely key piece of library service, and particularly as the library is a member of the community. And we have a technology development consultant who works with libraries, but what we've done in the last several years is we have purchased an assessment tool, a technology assessment tool for every library, every public library in the state. It's called the EDGE Assessment Tool, and it essentially allows libraries to assess their technology capacity, and then it goes the next step and provides opportunities and provides a toolkit for making changes and working with the community. We have found it to be a very, very effective tool. We use federal funds for this, and there are about 5 state libraries that do this on a statewide basis, and it's been very successful. We also, of course, have to administer our federal grant. We get about $2.1 million annually from LSTA, Grants to States Programs. It is from the Federal Institute of Museum and Library Services, and again, it funds statewide projects and competitive grants. It requires a match and a maintenance of effort. The maintenance of effort requires the state library to not replace existing state funds with federal grant dollars and to spend the state dollars for the same purposes as allowed by federal grant dollars. We use our Ready to Read grant program and our Talking Book and Braille program as the match and maintenance of effort for the federal funds. So one of the things that we have to be careful about is if there is a decrease in general fund, that could result in a decrease in federal funds as well. We don't anticipate that that will be a problem at this point, but sometimes it's hard to predict. Our Talking Book and Braille library is primarily our circulation and collections, and then our customer care and outreach. Talking Book and Braille Library is funded with general fund and other fund, primarily donation fund. We get all of our materials from the federal government, and that's not reflected in the budget. That's in kind, and they provide all the machines and all the reading materials for our patrons. And we also have a absolutely phenomenal group of donors, mostly people who have used the service or who have a family member who have used the service, and they provide us with a nice amount of money that we are able to use to provide enhancements. And by enhancements, I mean we do what's called Newsline, which is the telephone newspaper that our patrons can use. We also have Oregon books digitized and recorded, audio recorded. The other thing that we use that money for is for descriptive videos, which is a really interesting concept of having a video that's got narration behind it, so somebody who can't see it can hear. You know, they'll be able to hear so and so is walking towards the door rather than having to see it. And that's very popular. As you can see, we have a wide variety of patrons in our Talking Book and Braille Library. We really are working to increase our number of young people, but we have a large number of patrons who are over the age of 60. And who are very used to particular kinds of technology, and I won't say that that is true of everyone who is over 60, but we're kind of in a situation where we have to have a legacy system as well as the downloadable materials as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative.
So if you can go back to the age chart on there. Mm-hmm. So I think you kind of were getting to the point that maybe that the older people maybe aren't so plugged into technology and things, so they need like a paper Braille book. I'm kind of putting words in your mouth, but I think that's kind of what you're saying. But is there an opportunity or a future that I see here that maybe that service won't be needed anymore? Is it being replaced by something on the internet or?
Co-Chair Smith and Representative Nierman, thank you for that question. Actually, it's It's the audiobooks. It's rather than the Braille materials, it's the audiobooks that are on a thumb drive rather than downloadable materials and I'm grossly overgeneralizing here, but that the older people have difficulty with doing the downloadable books. I think that I am not sure that we will ever be in a situation where we won't need the program. I think that we are moving more and more towards downloadable materials. And so as we're able to kind of wean people off of the machines and help them with the downloadable, and that becomes more, you know, there's more widespread broadband, mm-hmm. all of those situations, I think, yes, we will have, we'll shift our focus, because one of the things that this is a public library for people who are blind. And one of the things that public libraries do is they help provide information on reading materials. And so our staff will be able to really focus on those professional tasks rather than the production task of moving things in and out of the building. So I anticipate, but I don't anticipate it's going to happen within the next 10 years.
So, okay, thank you.
Do you have a follow-up?
No, I'm fine.
Nope.
Thanks.
Okay. Please continue.
So we circulate materials. The players and digital books are sent to eligible Oregonians and returned to Talking Book and Braille Library via the U.S. mail. Free matter for the blind. So we send out about 1,200, between 1,200 and 1,500 audiobooks, which are in thumb drives, essentially. I just have to tell you this great little story about we have completely done away with our cassettes, audio cassettes, except we have one person who I believe lives in Hermiston, who is in her mid 100, you know, she's like 103 or 104. She wants to use cassettes. We will continue to give her cassettes as long as she wants them. So that's the only exception that we have to the cassettes. And she is apparently an absolutely delightful woman, and she's fine kind of reading the same things over. So. Also eligible Oregonians have access to high-speed internet, and I think that's one of the things that we need to be thinking about, is not every Oregonian has access to high-speed internet, and so that is required to be able to download directly from the Braille audio reading download, Braille and audio reading download, which is barred. But we encourage all of our patrons to use that downloadable service. The collections that we provide are audiobooks and magazines, Braille books and magazines, downloadable audiobooks. We provide access to national and Oregon newspapers via our newsline, and then the descriptive videos that I just mentioned. And of course, the outreach and customer care is particularly important, I think, with our Talking Book and Braille Library. We are always trying to grow the service, trying to provide it. Again, it's one of those situations that if you have used it or know someone who's used it, it's very, very, it's very popular. But there are a lot of people who don't know that it exists. And so we're doing outreach to assisted living and nursing facilities, both the staff and the residents, service organization members, public library staff, because those are the people who are on the ground working with people who are losing their vision or who are blind. And also state agency staff. We work with the Commission for the Blind. We work with the Veterans Affairs Department to provide those sorts of opportunities for people with visual disabilities. We are very careful to follow up with our newly registered patrons to assure their ability to use the service, because it can be a little confusing.
Let me ask a question, Mary Kate. I'm going to flip the paradigm on this. If you go back to your chart on age, I see that, you know, a large majority of them are 61 and over, you know, the 61 and over.
Mm-hmm.
But the hard reality is we're always going to have folks with disabilities. We're always going to have them. Mm-hmm. We're always going to, in my view, have an obligation to tend to their needs.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do as these younger folks who do want it downloaded, who want to listen to their book on this rather than on a little drive? How do you accommodate those folks?
Co-Chair Smith, that is a really good question, because I think that there are different levels of ability. And there are different levels of being able to use the technology. So, but what I think is happening is I think that the technology is adapting to the people with disabilities. So we're able to kind of change the technology so that it can be used. So for example, we moved from cassettes to the digital books.
Right.
Now what we're moving to, now what we're hoping to do is that everybody can download directly to their computer. And that's one of the things that the National Library Service is, since we work with them, we're tied to their progress. But you're absolutely right. I think there's always going to be a need for it. But I do think that iPads, the ESD the Northwest ESD up in the Tri-County area, they actually load the BARD app on all of the iPads that they give out to students.
Can you elaborate really quick? This is new to me and it's interesting. So we're dependent upon the
National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped.
Because they're the source of materials for us that we're getting to our Oregonians.
Yes.
Got it. That's
that
important
is correct.
For this committee to understand.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's really good to know. Okay, thank you.
Government Information and Library Services, which I hope is something that will become very, very familiar to all of you and to all of your staff. This essentially is the library service for state agency staff, for legislators, for legislative staff, and we are there to serve you. We have, we provide reference and outreach. We have technical services to keep our collections maintained, and then we do document delivery and interlibrary loan.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt you really quick. Colleagues, take note of this slide 28. That is a great reference for each and every one of you. I'll share with you in the last biennium, I blindly called it up. Didn't want him to know his Representative Smith. Started asking him for assistance, and it was phenomenal what they came back with. And again, it wasn't, Co-Chair Smith looking for help, so they tripped over themselves. They didn't know who it was. And it was great. And so at any point in time, if you need help with any type of research, looking up stuff, it's a great resource for each of us. Thank you. Sorry.
Co-Chair Smith, I think I'm going to leave now.
Yeah, there's your plug. But it was genuine. Colleagues, I really thought, I don't want to tell them who I am, and let's see how many months it takes before someone got back. They were literally back in touch with me within 13 hours. With some follow-up questions and probably 2-3 hours after that with information. So it's great.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I will pass that along to our government services staff. They are incredible. The Government Information and Library Services is funded primarily with an assessment. Everybody pays an assessment to the state library, and we use that to provide those services to you. We use that for everything that we provide through Government Information and Library Services. Those federal funds are a little bit of money that we use for IT. We're hoping to get that switched over to our operations division rather than the government information, but I didn't want to leave anything off of there. But it is almost exclusively state agency assessment. So here's the State Employee Information Center, and this is our eligible recipients are state officials, legislators. I mean, you guys can read this. I don't need to read this to you, but one of the things that's really important to us is that the state library will only fulfill state agency requests for resources or services that pertain to the conduct of state business. So that is very much what we are there for. On the other hand, the AnswerLand service, which is our virtual reference service, you can email them or you can text them, and they can provide reference services, and that's out of the Library Development Support and Development Division. So when the state library was creating new administrative rules for the subscriptions and certifying agencies, libraries, we also updated the rules to include the following definition of government information services, since there, over the course of the last several years, there have been some questions about what government information and library services is. And that is the physical collections, online resources, and professional library staff that support the information needs of Oregon state government. We've just recently launched our digital collections. We also collect state documents, state publications. So anything that's published by a state agency, we collect. And most of them now, of course, are born digital. So we are digitizing the old state publications, and we are archiving the current ones in our digital collections. I would very much suggest that you take a look at this. It's got some fascinating stuff in it, including some city and county publications, voter pamphlets, information from nonprofit organizations, information from tribal governments, and some wonderful historic documents that have been digitized. So these are the library materials that we provide, and since we are using less physical space and we're using that savings to purchase electronic databases that provide materials to state employees at their fingertips, so we are moving away from paper to a great extent and moving more to electronic resources, particularly full text resources, because when you look up something, when I went to school and I looked up something, I would get a citation. Well, what we want today is we want the full article. We want to be able to download that from the database. And a lot of that stuff is behind a paywall. We purchase that for state agency staff. And if we don't have the article, we will get it for you through our document delivery and interlibrary loan service. We have excellent, excellent staff who assist state agency staff with information requests, as Co-Chair Smith pointed out. We develop, maintain, and provide access to information collections. We borrow from other libraries as necessary. We have a current issue tracking service called Eclipse, which has just been updated, and I read it every morning. It's a very valuable look at what's going on in state government. And then we are really stepping up our outreach to state agency staff and the legislature. So the legislation that is currently in place for the state library is, of course, House Bill 5018, which is, of course, our budget bill, which I've just been discussing, and also Senate Bill 75. And I just wanted to, again, Senate Bill 75 is in, if I'm not mistaken, in the House Human Services Committee, Policy Committee. But I wanted you to be aware of it because what it does is it increases the eligible age for ready-to-read grant program from 0 to 14 to 0 to 17. It increases the minimum grant from 1,000 to 1,200. And out of our 133 libraries, we have about 50 libraries that get the minimum grant. It allows public libraries to use the funds for expanded learning opportunities, puts greater emphasis on outcomes, which we have done anyway, frankly, and specifically targets underserved children and families, which we have been trying to do as well. So I just want to give you a couple of examples of what would change with Senate Bill 75.
So let's really quick, does everyone know what Ready to Read is? Everyone's good on that? No? Can you just take 60 seconds and tell us what Ready to Read is?
Co-Chair Smith, absolutely. Ready to Read is the only state funding that goes to public libraries. It currently is at $1.4 million this biennium. It goes to legally established public libraries. It has to be used for summer reading program or early literacy programs. It is based 20% on population of children 0 to 14. 80% on population of children 0 to 14, and 20% on square mileage. And that has been in place since 1993. We've made some changes to it, but it's always been for children's services in public libraries, and we're the only state who does that.
Thank you for
that. Absolutely. So a couple of the things that could be expanded that public libraries could do if Senate Bill 75 passed is they could do STEM programs, science, technology, engineering, and math programs for K through 12th grade during the school year. They could have college prep programs and career fairs. They could use this funding. They can do all of these things already, but they could use the Ready to Read funding for this. And one of the things that I was speaking to with one of the staff members from the Beaverton City Library is when they go to parent education programs, they can give a book to the child, but they can also give a book to the teen parent. And there's nothing better than a child seeing that reading modeled. So it we're kind of betwixt and between with Senate Bill 75. Again, it's in a policy committee. But I did want to bring it to your attention so that you would know that this was not a this isn't a new concept. This is something that we've talked to the library community about, and it's something that that I think the library community would appreciate. Our agency budget drivers and environmental factors. I think that these you will see these in a number of budget presentations. The rapid pace of technology changes requires a rapid response by library staff. Reduction in local library budgets and the increasing while there is increasing use of local libraries requires increased state library support. For example, right now, I think you may know that the Douglas County Library, they had a tax district measure that didn't pass in November, so they will be closing their library in Douglas County. So we are doing a fair amount of consulting with the communities in Douglas County and with the Douglas County Commissioners to see if there is a way we can maintain the infrastructure as they figure out a funding solution, which is what they need, is a funding solution. Here are the key performance measures. I will be really honest. We have not done. We are looking pretty sad in some of our key performance measures. Some of them are very out of date, and we have been looking at how can we measure the real work of the state library. And so we have proposed some key performance measures. We have 15 right now. That is that's a fairly large number of key performance measures for a smaller agency. But what we are proposing is to move that down to 5 key performance measures that actually measure the success and the outcomes of the 3 programs that the 3 divisions. So the first one would provide us with the effectiveness of the training and consulting provided by the Oregon Public Libraries if we were using the Oregon Public Library standards. If we use cost per circulation of talking book and braille, which we currently use, and it does keep going down, but that will show us the efficiency of talking book and braille library services. And then the average daily use of government information and library services, electronic resources, that's what people primarily want and what state agency staff use. So we can look at what we're spending and look at how much use it's getting from state agencies. We would, of course, retain the 2 key performance measures about satisfaction with agency customer service and the total number of best practices met by the State Library Board. So I have a couple of things in the appendix, our full organizational chart.
So let's take a pause here. On your key performance measures, share with me the ones that you are most concerned about. Share with the community.
The current ones?
Yeah.
Number of research transactions for state employees, as you could see, that does not look good. And I think one of the reasons is we have not been able to define what a research transaction is. We need to redefine what a research transaction is, because we do everything from providing listservs to our Eclipse service to in-depth reference searching. So that's something that is very difficult to measure. The percentage of state employees registered, eventually what I'd like to do is I would like to have everybody be registered for government services when they start working for the state of Oregon. The cost per state employee contact, again, that's, I think that's fine. It's going down, but I'm not sure that it's completely accurate. I think that the number of individuals registered to receive talking book and braille library service, it's an input, it's an output. It's not really an outcome.
So I correct me on this. As I look at the second one, percent of state employees registered to use the State Employee Information Center, your target was 24%, but you reached 26%. So even though the percentage is very low, you're still 2% above your goal.
Kutcher Smith. Yes. No, that's absolutely. We didn't do poorly on everything.
Okay, well then I look at cost per state employee contact. Your target was 525, but you did it 378.
378. So there are.
That's positive.
Yes, there are some things that we have been, and I think that those are probably the things that are really give us the most insight into what we're doing.
Well, and then your next one, number of individuals registered to receive talking books. You're off by 44, but I mean that's a 0.00 something. Mm-hmm. So really you're a break even there. So you've met that goal. So I mean really the one that stands out is the one at the very top.
Yes.
The rest of the goals is as I looked at them, they're in line. What am I missing on
this? On the second page.
Are we get to the second page? Are we off?
Can I ask?
Yeah, please, Representative.
Thank you, Chair. What defines an employee contact, a state employee contact?
Co-Chair Smith and Representative Marsh, that is very vague. And that's
cheap. It's cheap.
It is. It is. And I think what we do is we put together currently And just, I just need to say that we have, we actually have a new program manager in our government services division, and one of the things I have tasked her with is measurement of our services, and so what we do right now is everything is kind of equal. If you have a subscription to Eclipse, that's a reference transaction,
mm-hmm.
And if you call up and ask for a the cost per circulation or the cost per state employee contact, those can be as different as a subscription to Eclipse or a fairly in-depth reference question, and then we add those all together and divide it by the assessment fund.
Follow up?
Yeah, please.
Thank you. Well, it certainly suggests that you are having all kinds of employee contacts that are in addition to those research transactions, because your cost per contact is significantly lower than what you projected.
Correct.
Your research transactions may be lower, but someplace you're making it up in other kinds of contacts.
Representative Marsh, that is true. And I think what I'm concerned about is that this particular information gives a false picture of the depth of information that we're providing. Because, like I say, if you have a subscription to our Eclipse, which does take staff time, that's the equivalent, essentially, of a when we're talking about cost per contact. That's the equivalent of a reference transaction. That's the equivalent of, you know, calling and asking a reference question.
So you need to just recategorize your contacts.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yes.
So can we go to the Oregon School Library Information System? And our target was 4,500. We only hit 2,500. To me, that would seem like that's an easy outreach to the school system to get them to utilize this.
Co-Chair Smith, that is why we created the Oregon School Library Information System. What I think we are discovering is with the loss of school librarians in schools, students are not getting the instruction in how to do appropriate research, and also we have had some technical issues with OSLIS, and so that, you know, this year we're doing much better, but last, you know, over the course of the 2 years, we have had some troubles, but we don't do a lot of outreach. We don't do any outreach to schools. We don't have the staff for it, and so I really think that if there were people in the schools who could help students learn how to use the tool, that would make a very big difference. But we keep losing certified school librarians.
What's the source of funding for this?
Oregon School Library Information System?
Yeah.
That is exclusively federal funds.
Okay, one last thought, and then we need to move on here. To me, it would seem like, Mr. Co-Chair, you and I ought to have a conversation with the Education Subcommittee co-chairs and say, we've got this federally funded tool. It's a great resource. How do we help our schools better understand that the state library has this available to them?
I completely agree.
And tie the two together, get the two folks talking to each other.
Co-chairs, I would welcome that.
Would that be all right if we just we talk about that in the future? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's continue on here. I'm going to...
I believe that's the end of my presentation.
Is it? Okay. Do we have any other questions?
Mr. Co-Chair?
Yeah, please.
Just one. I really enjoyed the presentation. The library is doing great things. You know, I've visited the library a couple of times, so... when we're talking about funding, we said other fundings, and you know, might be something that's kind of far out there. But I was just wondering, from the state perspective, you know, as far as revenues or revenue sources and things like that, does the library have the ability or any contact as a 501c3 or anything like that, or is strictly state funded and donations?
Co-Chair Manning, we do not have a 501c3. And just to give you just a short bit of history, we did have a library foundation about 25, 30 years ago. There was some funny business, and so we've been a little hesitant about creating a foundation or a friends group or something like that, which is often what libraries will do. So we do have the donation fund and the endowment fund for Talking Book and Braille, but that's part of state government. That's not a 501c3.
Okay, so moving forward, just when we're looking at budget cuts across the board and stuff, do you think that might be something, a reputable foundation board to get established if the governor is willing to participate in that?
Co-Chair Manning, I would be delighted. We actually make a point of suggesting to libraries that they have a foundation. And that's something that we've had discussions about. So, yes, that would definitely be something I would be very interested in.
Thank you. Thank you, Coach.
Thank you, Mr. Coach. All right. Mary Kay, you're wrapped up?
I'm done.
All right. Thank you. Lisa, do you want to go next?
Yes.
Aletha, I'm going to have Lisa from DAS Chief Financial Office go next.
Oh.
And then we'll move into...
You know, my nickname is Lisa at home, so I...
There you go.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, my name is Lisa Pearson with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'm going to provide a very, very brief summary of the governor's budget. And we'll start with, the state librarian mentioned, the issues facing the library include technological change, local library funding, and demographic change. This slide shows a summary of the expenditures and revenues over the past 10 years. The chief purpose of this slide is to show that there's been a lot of fluctuation over the past 10 years. And then that sort of culminated in the passage of House Bill 3523, in 2015. The funding and the expenditures sort of stabilized at that point. And for 2017-19, the current service level essentially is carrying forward at a 6% increase over the legislatively approved budget. But the governor's budget, because of the unfortunate situation we find ourselves in statewide, does include a reduction. Just as a reminder, these are the four programs, including the amount of total funds in each and what each slice represents of the overall programming. And as a reminder, library development and Talking Books and Braille are the only places with general fund, which leads to after we, you know, take a look at this, and obviously with a library, most of your funding or expenditures are going to be in personal services. So that leads to the reduction of 12% to the Ready to Read program. That is the result, as I said, of the overall state budget picture. That is a $487,155 general fund reduction. As the state librarian mentioned, it could potentially lead to a loss of federal funding. And the estimate of that would be about $25,000. But that isn't for sure yet. And so that is a, well, I should say, in looking at this budget, in terms of the overall governor's budget, really the focus areas were on education and trying to maintain education, and then trying to deal with human services, children in foster care, their safety, et cetera. And so this is one of the agencies, unfortunately, that did not fall into one of those primary categories. And as a result, wound up with the reduction to the Ready to Read grant program.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, thank you. That one is, for me, that's kind of hard for me to deal with a reduction in that program. That program is very vital, especially in underserved and low-income areas and rural areas. I would do everything that I can to make sure that we can fund that, whatever I can do. Because that one would, I mean, we're talking about increasing graduation rates in the state. We're talking about a better quality of education. And education starts at the pre-K level and works its way up. I'm really concerned about that cut there, or that potential proposed cut. We've got a long ways to go before we get there. Thank you, Co-Chair.
Very good. I'll follow your lead. All righty. Anything else, Lisa?
No, Mr. Chair, Co-Chair, thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. All right, Aletha, you're up.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Manning, and members of the subcommittee, my name is Aletha Bonebrake. I am the current chair of the State Library Board, and I've served on the board for 7 years. I am the retired director of the Baker County Library District in Eastern Oregon, having served in that capacity for 22 years. Also, I was a founding member of the SAGE Library Consortium, combining the catalogs of 77 public, academic, school, and special libraries serving 15 counties in Eastern and Central Oregon. So I've been at this a long time. You may hear some repetition of what Mary Kay said, but because of the experience over the last 7 years, I've highlighted the significant activities that have occurred as I see them. The board is made up of 9 members now appointed by the governor to meet the diversity of composition outlined in the 2015 House Bill 3523. The executive director of the Commission for the Blind and the deputy superintendent of public instruction or their designees were added to the board as permanent members, and 2 rotating positions designated to be filled by agency staff are now completed. As directors from the previous board cycle off, replacement candidates are selected to ensure representation of each of the constituencies listed in House Bill 3523 and a geographic balance for directors representing the public. The board now comprises a diverse and knowledgeable membership able to carry out the specific activities listed in House Bill 3523 to improve interagency cooperation and to strengthen and streamline the delivery of its core services to state government and the reading disabled public, and to provide technical support and management of federal grants to public, academic, school, and special libraries throughout Oregon. The implementation of House Bill 3523, as I said, passed by the legislature in the 2015 session, and our strategic plan for 2014 to 2017 have been the work of the board this biennium. The four strategic imperatives guiding this work have dramatically changed how we look at our business of delivering services to meet our responsibility to our constituencies. Briefly, focus on the customer is being met by developing customer service standards, defining customer segments, identifying potential new customers, and addressing customer satisfaction to determine the allocation of resources. The second, building awareness of the state library, caused a reputation audit to be conducted and develop an awareness campaign to create increased usage of the state library by key audiences. Third, enhancing partnerships. This strategic imperative has resulted in identifying partnerships, determining where we can reduce overlap and duplication of services, and collaborating with partner agencies to increase the effectiveness and efficiency in the services we share to all Oregonians. And last, cultivate staff strengths. The success of this imperative is being achieved by instituting a performance management system to provide a framework for continuous improvement and appropriate professional development for all staff members. The State Library Board appreciates the direction given in House Bill 3523 and the subsequent support shown for maintaining and strengthening the State Library's role of service to all Oregonians. House Bill 3523 and the budgetary support for its implementation this past biennium has been a timely challenge to finding better ways to manage information among all government agencies and new purpose to the State Library's three organizational departments and its advisory councils to meet these challenges with better service delivery systems and cost-saving decisions. The board has been deeply involved in these changes and looks forward to continuing to meet the expectations of the legislature for increased efficiency through technology and partnerships. The Embedded Librarian Program for Government Services is an innovative change that has been implemented by the State Library staff as a result of the Board's strategic planning process. As you saw from the statistics in 2016, 26% of state agency employees used the State Employee Information Center website, and 7,800 reference transactions were completed. The State Library has approximately 20 partnerships with state agencies, cultural institutions, philanthropic organizations, and federal agencies. One of the most successful partnerships created by ORS 357-900 is the Reference Coordinating Council, comprising the State Library, State of Oregon Law Librarian, and State Archivist. In response to House Bill 3523 requirement to streamline electronic resources acquisition and delivery, the Council developed a process for seeing that electronic subscription requests from agencies were routed to the appropriate member agency. Rules for effective management and sharing of reference databases purchased by all state agencies, as outlined in ORS 357-115, were established and adopted in June of 2016. The State Library has created a spreadsheet of 118 agency liaisons in order to have a broad coalition identifying electronic resource needs to be coordinated. The State Library has also been able to purchase over $150,000 in electronic resources with money saved through weeding the print collection and closing the reference room, thereby vacating an entire floor and recovering rental costs. The strongest program the State Library provides to the children of Oregon is the Ready to Read grant program, which currently provides 94 cents per child. with the expansion of the program to age 17, authorized under Senate Bill 75, the governor's budget for the ready-to-read program without commensurate funding would reduce the per-child allocation from 94 cents to 67.2 cents per child. Maintaining the program at 94 cents per child would require an increase in the governor's recommended budget from $978,540 to $1,465,695, $1.4 million. If passed by the legislature, the Senate Bill 75 expansion of the ready-to-read grant program also provides the opportunity for after-school or out-of-school programming during the school year, in addition to the traditional summer reading programs. Senate Bill 75 serves to align this very successful program with the age and programming guidelines of other state literacy goals and the education investments of the state, all of which have involved a broad stakeholder process. All 133 eligible public libraries in Oregon applied for and were awarded a grant in 2016. In 2016, every $1 in grant funding leveraged an average of $1.89 in community support. The State Library thanks the legislature for continued funding of this marvelous program touching every child in the state. The board supports the State Librarian in the innovative organizational development of the past biennium and in fostering a cooperative environment among staff and agency partners. Thank you all for your kind attention, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? Any comments?
I think she just dropped the mic.
That was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Aletha.
Thank you very much.
All right. We're going to next hear from, let's see, how about Kate and Dawn? Is it Dawn? Mm-hmm. Yeah, come on down. Welcome. If you could just introduce yourself for the record. And in the interest of time, if each one of you could take about 5 minutes, no more than 5 minutes, if that's all right.
You want to go first? You can go ahead.
Okay. Hello, co-chairs. Thank you. My name is Kate Lasky, and I'm from Josephine County. I serve as the library director for Josephine County, which is an underfunded community in many ways. Many public services are no longer funded through regular tax means, and I believe the area has been federally designated as economically depressed. I come here because I want to ask you to prioritize, which you have mentioned, the 94 cents for the Ready to Read grant and explain to you what that looks like in my community, a rural Southern Oregon community, sort of that boots on the ground, what we do with that money. It translates into a variety of programs, one important program being our summer reading program. We serve about 1,000 kids through that program over the summer and prevent summer reading slide between grades. We also really depend on our state library for what I would call thought leadership in their mentorship of partnering. So we also use our Ready to Read grant funds to partner with the public health department and have WIC risk families into the library and receive special story times and book giveaways with those funds. And we also partner with our education service district in a similar way to provide story times for children with Asperger's or autism spectrum disorder in our library and other sensory issues. So those funds, I think, like what Aletha said, they really expand from the $1 per child or the 94 cents per child out to, I would even say more than the 100 or the 189 that was anticipated by what she said. I would also add that the library development staff is incredibly supportive, and the youth services consultant in particular. We love our state librarian as well, but our youth services consultant is ready at a phone call to provide instant consultation services for troubles or challenges we may face in our communities. For example, if I'm trying to figure out the best type of program to provide, she will send me a comprehensive list of more than 20 programs that have succeeded in communities like mine from around the state that she thinks will apply to my community. And for us in rural Oregon, that is an invaluable service that I would hope that you continue to support, and specifically through the Ready to Read grant. Please do prioritize it, and please, when you list your priorities out, that birth to three doesn't receive services in my community, and that's where we use that money. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
All right. Hi. My name is Dawn Borgart, and I am a member of the Oregon Library Association. I was on the statewide task force that reviewed and updated the Ready to Read grant in 2014, and I'm also a youth services librarian at the Beaverton City Library. And at the Beaverton City Library, we had last year in 2016 almost 8,000 children and teens participate in our summer reading program, and about 1,500 parents and young children receive early literacy services that were funded by the Ready to Read grant. So I'm here to support restoration of the proposed cut to maintain funding at current levels for the Ready to Read grant, because we find it to be really successful as well. You've already heard today that this grant program is very successful. It's almost 25 years old. And in that time, attendance at children's literacy programs at public libraries in our state has roughly tripled, from about 488,000 to almost 1.4 million. This grant gives libraries the support that we need to be able to provide excellent early literacy and summer reading programs across the state, and also to reach, as you mentioned, a lot of those underserved youth that can't get to the library or don't know about library services or have different barriers to reach us. So to talk about summer reading a little bit, in 2016, the report just came out about 190,000 children and teens up to age 14, and about 64,000 adults participated in grant-funded summer reading programs across the state. And at Beaverton, we were able to give away 4,000 new books to children and teens up to age 14 funded by this grant, who met their summer reading goals of reading 15 hours this summer. And that free book is really important because it's a reward for reading and also an encouragement to continue reading. And one of the things we've done with the charge of this grant to reach out to underserved populations is to try to find some of those youth that are in places that maybe they live far from the library, maybe they don't have parents who are home during the day to bring them to the library. So we found that if we partner with the school district and go out to free lunch sites at parks and schools, we can administer the summer reading program to them where they are. And that's something that the grant has spurred on for us. The Ready to Read grant is also integral in helping Oregon kids get ready for kindergarten. So again, in 2016, about 120,000 youth and about 42,000 adults participated in grant-funded early literacy programming. Those are huge numbers. At Beaverton, we were able to start a new program that we borrowed from Brooklyn, actually, which is called Ready, Set, Kindergarten. And it's a series of six early literacy enhanced workshops, story times really, for kids and families who are just about to start kindergarten. And we not only kind of cater this workshop, this series of workshops and story times to that particular age for the family, but we also go out to the schools, partner with the schools, and at their kindergarten roundups, give away a book that is specifically about a child who's getting ready for kindergarten to those families to encourage them to come to these workshops and kind of enhance their readiness so that those kids are ready to read when they start school. And again, the grant has funded the books that we give away at both of those instances. And also, as Kate mentioned, the Ready to Read grant helps prioritize reaching underserved youth by getting outside the library walls. So in 2016, 82 out of the 130 libraries that wrote reports about how they used their grant funds use state funds to reach underserved youth with literacy-rich programming. And one of the things that we do at Beaverton towards that end is to reach out. We partner with our Continuing Education for Young Parents program. That's in one of the high schools, and that's where we go out and deliver story times to teen parents and their kids and their teacher on a regular basis and give them, again, free books that they can take home to build their libraries. And one of the things, so the grant funds those books, but one of the things we've been able to do in terms of leveraging that service is we have a Library on Wheels service where we go out to daycares and provide story time and drop off a bin of books and then come back 3 weeks later and trade out the books and provide story time and early literacy tips as well. And at this high school program, we had trouble getting in with our Library on Wheels. We just couldn't quite connect with the right people to get the schedule to work so that we could come and do story times at their daycares. And because we've had so much success with the Ready to Read grant funded program, where we go into the classrooms, they've now invited us into the daycare as well. So we've been really happy to see that happen. So in summation, the Ready to Read grant is really important because it encourages excellence across the state. In 2016, 133 of the eligible public libraries applied for and received grants, as you've heard. It's fantastic. And 125 of those libraries were able to implement one or more of the best practices in youth services. So they were able to provide summer reading programming, early literacy education to youth and their caregivers, and to provide outreach to underserved populations. So these grant funds encourage local public libraries to seek increasingly innovative and effective ways to help grow communities of strong and resilient readers who will be the students and workers of tomorrow. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you again for your support of libraries and readers.
Committee, any questions?
Here.
Senator?
Thank you, Co-Chair. Kate, I point out that various tax measures that we enacted for 50, for example, some counties got really shortchanged in that because they did not have a tax base, and Josephine County is one of those. It's a little bit over 50 cents per thousand compared to Jackson County, which is over $2 per thousand. So I just appreciate you coming up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you so much for your testimony presentation. Very effective. And we have next up, I want to make sure I get this right. Buzzy Nielsen. All right. I didn't mess it up, did I?
You did not.
Came close to messing it up, though. Okay.
Hey, Co-Chair, committee members, thank you so much for hearing me out. My name is Buzzy Nielsen. I'm the director of the Crook County Library in Prineville. And I've been around the block a little bit, so I'll also talk a little bit about some of the other libraries that I've worked at as well. I'm here also to speak about maintaining the 94 cents per child for the Ready to Read grant program. In the Crook County Library, we have the same issue that many Eastern Oregon counties and cities have, which is we have a very, very large geography to serve. And the $7,200 that we receive annually from the Ready to Read grant program completely funds our summer children's programming for ages 0 to 12. And that, as Kate mentioned, we have used that to leverage partnerships with several agencies, including the Health Department, the Parks and Recreation District, the museum, as well as various social service agencies as well. We focus that on encouraging children to read, in particular in getting books into the hands of children. Research is pretty unequivocal that having books in the home is a huge, huge help for children. And so we make sure that every participant in our program has a book. We do that while also reaching out to our far-flung communities, including Palina, Post, and Pal Butte. I wanted to mention my experience at some other libraries. So I used to work for the Hood River County Library, which is one of the unfortunate libraries that closed at one point in the past. It has since reopened as a special district library, and Ready to Read grant money was essential to getting Hood River's children's programming during the summer up and running again. It was we would not have been able to get to the point that Hood River County is now without that funding. Hood River County also has done a lot of innovative things with the money related to early childhood literacy. Some people often don't think about this with Hood River County, but Hood River County actually has the largest population of Latino residents of any county in the state. It's about a third of the population. And this last year, Hood River County actually won an award for having an outstanding Ready to Read grant program for a bus project they did. It's called LEX, the Library Express Bus. And what that did is it provided a bus between Odell and Hood River. There are three branches for the Hood River County Library District. There's one in Cascade Locks, Hood River, and Parkdale. Odell is a community about in the center of Hood River County. It is the fruit packing district. It's where Diamond Fruit and Duckwall Fruit, the two largest employers in Hood River County, reside, and it's about 70% Latino. So Hood River County provided a bus that went on every other Saturday between Hood River and Odell to bring people to the downtown Hood River Library and provide them with a bilingual story time. We actually partnered with other organizations and businesses to be able to feed people. We provided tips and information for parents to be able to read to their children, and it was a huge success. It was kind of an experiment to see, and it started out a little bit slow, but it ended up being a massive, massive success. The other place I wanted to mention is the Langlois Public Library. Langlois is a tiny community on the north end of Curry County on the south coast, and it serves about approximately 750 people, and they are one of those 50 minimum grant receivers that Mary Kay mentioned. This is also a significant part of their children's budget. Actually, it funds their entire summer reading program for children as well. And Langlois gets numbers for their summer reading program that cities like Beaverton and Portland would be jealous of. Upwards of 70% of the children in the community participate in the summer reading program. It's the library is essential to the summer life in that community, and this funding is very essential to that as well. Very, very briefly, I also wanted to mention the Talking Book and Braille services has been essential in almost all of the communities I've been in. We have, particularly in rural Oregon, we have a lot of older patrons, and this is their lifeline. This keeps them interested and active and keeps their brains going. We sign up a lot of patrons for Talking Book and Braille services, and they are incredibly appreciative of that. So thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Nielsen? Sir, thank you so much, and I apologize for making sure that I didn't screw your name.
Oh, hey, you did great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Before we leave, there's no one else signed up at this time, but I'd like to ask if there's anyone that would like to provide any testimony. We have about 2-3 minutes left. Representative?
Oh, well, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Obviously, we're on the other side of the desk here, no testimony, but I think these folks who have, in some cases, traveled a long way here might like to hear from us how much I know we universally appreciate your making that effort and how committed I sense that this group is toward libraries and certainly the Ready to Read program. I know I don't want a bunch of librarians chasing me down. And so I think when we get to the point of actually making budget recommendations, I am quite certain we'll be carefully remembering your comments here today.
Good comment. And it also, just want to make one other point. It is good to see Mr. Nielsen out representing librarians as a male. I mean, not as a male. A male representing librarians, because most of the time we only see ladies that are out there that are librarians. So it is, it's up to two gentlemen. Thank you so much, sir. Okay. So I guess there's no further business at this time. So I guess we will know everybody's straight. Then we will go ahead and what are we going to do? We're going to close public hearing. All right. See, I get good guidance up here. And we will adjourn and we will reconvene. See, I get good guidance up here. And we will adjourn and we will reconvene. All right.